First, Costing the Earth brings you a little sunshine. Miriam O'Reilly looks at the potential of solar power for Britain and asks whether, when the oil runs out, desert sun from the Sahara could provide much of our energy.
This has to be one of the most recognisable images in the entire world. The pyramids of Giza, their sandstone and granite facades reflecting the intense Egyptian sun. They really are an amazing feat of engineering, built in a corner of Egypt's vast desert to honour the passing of the pharaohs. I'm leaving Cairo and one of the seven wonders of the world behind to head south. And here, south of Cairo, on the edge of the 8 million square kilometre expanse of the Sahara Desert, the Egyptians are just about to embark on another engineering wonder. This is Kerimat, a stark and windy stretch of land where hundreds of giant mirrors are to be built to capture the rays of the sun to generate electricity, the site of one of many solar power plants planned for the Middle East and North Africa. Today on Costing the Earth, we ask, as the oil runs out, could solar power from the Sahara Desert be the future of electricity generation for Europe?
Our grandfathers, the pharaohs, has been knowing the value of sun. So they have been worshipping the sun as God. Now, you know, if we looked from the wisdom of our so many thousand years ago, then we should use the sun, which was the source for worship for our grandfathers. Let us use it to develop our life and develop our communities.
Professor Galal Osman, Vice President of the World Wind Energy Association. Is this the first solar power plant for Egypt?
It is the first solar power plant of Egypt. It will be the start of a mosaic of 2,500 power plants the same size. Because the plans is that we can go to 50 giga or 50,000 mega. This is small, tiny one is only 20 mega. So this will be one of a row of 2,500 similar power plants, which as if we are cultivating the old desert with mirrors so that we can get life to this bare land which has not been touched since mankind.
Could Egypt provide Europe with all of its electricity needs?
The calculation done that a small area of 100 kilometer, which is very small area, can supply all Europe with their demands from the solar energy coming, falling on the Egyptian deserts.
Solar power is nothing new. In California, it's been established for over 20 years. But in terms of uptake, most countries are still on the starting blocks. Spain and Portugal have just built large plants, while Germany and Austria are the only two countries as yet to have made solar attractive and affordable to house owners. Yet, could we be missing a trick here in Britain by overlooking the obvious? That the sun is the most powerful tool in our search for new forms of energy.
At this stage, it's very hard to predict exactly how much power we will use from solar or we might use from new energy sources.
David Matthews of the Solar Trade Association.
Because one cannot say where the new energies are going to come from. But if we don't get any other alternative sources of energy, when the fossil fuels run out and when the uranium runs out, we're going to be running on just solar power and geothermal power. Everything else is a subset of solar power. Even wind is a subset of solar power. That's all we've got. Everybody talks also about biomass, all the stuff that grows. That comes from photosynthesis, so that's solar power as well. So we then are back to just solar power. But the important point to remember there is we've got 8,300 times more sunshine coming onto the planet than we use at the moment. So we only have to capture like 1/8,000th of that solar power to be able to run the planet.
8,300 times more sunshine than we use. But then, as chief executive of the Solar Trade Association, David Matthews would look on the bright side. But there is little awareness of the potential of solar power and a belief that it only works in sunny countries. Not so, says Professor of Technology Policies at the Open University, Dave Elliott.
It's a cold winter's day here, and it's difficult to imagine that solar energy is going to be that relevant in the UK. But you have to remember that it doesn't matter what the outside temperature is. The sort of clear, fresh winter's days you get in the UK quite a lot of the time is fine. for generating electricity. Solar heat collectors, well, that's different. Then you obviously need nice, hot, sunny days with plenty of hot sun. But PV works on light, so the temperature of that is pretty much irrelevant.
So we don't need hot, sunny weather to benefit from the most commonly used types of solar energy, PV or photovoltaics, using silicon cells like those used in calculators, placed in a panel that charge electricity when they're exposed to light. And solar thermal, panels that collect heat from sunlight and transfer it to a hot water cylinder.
The most familiar to many people's solar system is the rooftop solar collector. It looks a bit like a radiator. It's plumbed into a hot water system, delivers hot water. Over the year, it'll save, if depending on where you are, something like a half your fuel bill by otherwise not having to use gas for heating water. The next technology, which is the modern advanced stuff, is electricity producing solar photovoltaics. Those are like the solar cells on cameras and some consumer devices, and that generates electricity. They're much more expensive than generating heat from solar collectors, but it's catching on. I mean, its price is dropping fast. 10-15 years' time, it's going to be the sort of thing that a lot of people will find attractive.
Still sceptical that on these wintry days in Britain this will actually work, I set out to see for myself. I'm in a suburban street in Wandsworth in southwest London, standing outside a semi-detached house, and I can just see, if I stand on my tiptoes, a solar panel just on the side of the roof. Johannes Glebe, it belongs to you. It is a typical English winter day in that there is bright sunshine, it's quite bright, and then it gets very dark and it's been raining as well. So during the winter months, days like today, do you still have a constant supply
of
hot water?
All day. As soon as it starts, light starts coming out, the heat that is transformed is given to the cold water storage tank, and then that warms up.
It's not that I don't believe you, but can I go inside and run my hand under the tap to just to find out for myself?
Yeah.
How long have you had the solar panel?
Since 2003.
Did it cost a lot to install?
Well, we needed to change the boiler anyway, because it was outdated and it was giving problems anyway, and that then we complemented with the solar panel. So we invested at that time 3,500 into the boiler and the whole installation of it, and then on top of that there was £1,500 for the solar panel and the water tank. It needs a hot water storage tank, so that needed to come with it.
So it's a solar thermal panel.
Yes.
And let's see just how hot your water is.
It takes some time to come down here because it's upstairs.
Well, it's coming through now and it is hot. I can still keep my fingers under the water, but I would say that was hot enough to wash up in.
Yes.
Have a shower.
Yeah.
Have a bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels fine.
Entirely.
It seems quite a simple thing to do. Put a solar panel on your roof. Reduce your bills or what it costs you to heat your water by 50%.
Absolutely.
So if the capacity is there in the UK for substantial amounts of energy to be generated by photovoltaics and solar thermal, surely solar energy is a winner. If I just turn the key in the lock and push the door, I'm stepping out onto the roof at Southampton University with Dr. Thomas Marquardt. Along the roof here is an array of solar panels. This is a test facility sponsored by the government, looking into solar power and what it can deliver.
This is one of the oldest installations, photovoltaic installations in the UK. This is a DTI test facility which enabled the engineering guidelines for grid connection of photovoltaics in the UK.
Just how far could this technology go?
In the UK, we could supply a substantial amount of our electricity from photovoltaics and substantial amount of our heat from the hot water panels. The main reason why solar power is not as common as a car, for example, is that it's expensive, but it's coming down all the time.
If I had photovoltaic panels on my roof to produce my electricity, what would it cost me, one householder?
In ballpark figures, an array of something like 15 square meters might cost you around £5,000, £5,000 or £6,000.
But is that just the initial installation cost?
Well, there is really not much more than the initial cost. After that, it's pretty much free.
Well, that's great. For a £5,000 outlay, I could have free electricity in my house year-round.
In principle, yes. You would have free electricity for at least 20, 30 years and probably longer.
Could we, though, have enough solar energy in this country to give us all we need year-round?
We can generate the total amount of energy, although it would be difficult to generate it when we need it most.
In the winter?
In winter, on a dark winter evening. It's not too difficult to store electricity from daytime, lunchtime, for example, to evening on the same day. It's not easy to store all the energy, all the electricity that we might generate in summer for a dark evening in December.
This is Costing the Earth on BBC Radio 4. So, as yet, the costs of solar power are still high compared to other forms of energy, and the possibility of providing heat and electricity on dark winter nights still low. But out here in the Sahara Desert, that's not a problem, which is why some experts are hailing the world's deserts as the most bounteous source of untapped energy. A growing number of scientists, engineers, and investors are putting their faith in CSP. Their ambitious plan is to build enough plants in the Sahara, like this one in Egypt, to transport energy from North Africa via high-voltage cables under the Mediterranean, right up through mainland Europe.
The sun comes down onto the desert, it hits the mirrors, and what it does is it concentrates the heat from the sun, and that then is powered onto liquid, whether or not it be water or another liquid. That then turns into steam with the high temperatures, and with steam you can turn a turbine. That's it. Once you've got a turbine turning, you've got electricity generating. So it's that simple.
The resources are unlimited because they are based on sunshine and they are renewable. And the capacity that can be made available technologically is surpassing the human energy demand by several orders of magnitude. So we can produce several hundred times more electricity in theory than we need.
Polly Higgins and Franz Trieb are members of the Desert Tech Group. Franz Trieb of the German Aerospace Center carried out feasibility studies on the CSP idea.
You can store the heat that is produced in the solar field during the day. For example, the first plant that is now built in Spain with 50 megawatt capacity has about 7 hours of full load storage capacity using a thermal energy storage. That means the heat is collected during the day and part of the heat is stored for the night in big tanks of molten salt, taken out at night for the production of steam and for the production of electricity.
We only need 1% of the desert. Only 1% of the desert would give us all of our energy needs for the whole of Europe, Middle East, and North Africa. So the reality is, lots of plants can be made. We're not going to run out of sun. It's a renewable resource. Anywhere that you have a high, what's called a high solar irradiance, these plants can be placed. Inevitably, they need to be close to water to make them as economic as possible, because you do need a certain amount of water to run the plants, but the water itself can be desalinated and then fed into communities, so they then have that ancillary benefit. The beauty is how you can also utilize that land where you put the plants to grow things, because of course the mirrors themselves provide shade, so it's another ancillary benefit that you could use it for agricultural purposes underneath.
You have electricity, you produce maybe water with seawater desalination, so you have the basis for life and development. And if I see that in the MENA region, Middle East, North Africa, in 50 years there will be 300 million more people, according to the UN statistics, these people will need a place for living, and we have to go to the desert for living. Yeah, and here we have really the possibility to create living space in the deserts. Yeah, and even we have surplus energy to export to Europe. So we have energy, we have water, and we have income. And I think you can make a living from that.
Franz Trieb and Polly Higgins. Enthusiasts like them see many benefits for people in desert regions to create more energy and prosperity for themselves, as well as being able to export a valuable commodity to Europe. These ideas are endorsed by Prince Hassan of Jordan, who sees concentrating solar power as a hugely important tool in creating peace, stability and prosperity in the Middle East.
It's a dual-purpose concept, it's a cheap concept, it's a clean concept, and I just hope that before people get off the oil bandwagon when prices go beyond $90 and $100 and get onto the nuclear bandwagon, that they will give a chance to a source of energy that is there and capable of providing 100 times, many hundred times, the needs of people on Mother Earth. I think in a nutshell it will bring about an industrial revolution for the southern Mediterranean, that is to say from the Levant or the Near East all the way to Morocco and into Spain. People will realize that energy is available, that the development of resources, whether municipal industrial water, whether agricultural water, whether drinking water, is available. It brings our two regions together. 170,000 people working in alternative energy in Germany alone today. And this sharing of interest brings about good neighborhood and warm peace.
Kermat is one of the pilot plants. You can probably just hear in the distance the diggers clearing rock and sand. There's very little here at the moment apart from a few concrete buildings and a perimeter fence. But there is a town about a mile away. I can just see the concrete skyline. Elsewhere, we're surrounded by desert, grainy sand and nothing else. But that could soon change. Professor Galal Osman. We're standing on a hill overlooking where the power plant will be, and there is some groundwork going on. There aren't any buildings there yet. There will be some, and there certainly aren't any of these giant mirrors that will dominate this landscape. Tell me how it will look in a couple of years from now.
In a couple of years from now, this area will have about 130,000 square meter of mirrors. Mirrors will look like rows of 50 or 60 meter of parabolic trough collectors, which are like semicircles, tracking the sun and then pumping, reflecting with high percentage of reflection, 99% to vacuum tubes, with vacuum tubes which have selective coating or good absorbing material that you absorb solar energy and don't radiate them back. You collect solar energy and then just pump it to generate your electricity to reach the total image. You can supply all the world from solar, from the Sahara, or you can supply all Europe, or you can supply, you know, there is more than enough. With a smaller square of 100 kilometer by 100 kilometer, then you can generate all your energy for the world.
Your big plan is to use this first plant to supply 200,000 Egyptian homes. But you're thinking about establishing 1,000 solar power plants in the Sahara Desert. Where will all that electricity go?
Then the way is to mushroom this power plant and have electricity to export it to Europe. 5,000 times size of this plant can be exported to Europe through three connections across the Mediterranean. One between Libya and Sicily in Italy, one between Tunisia and Sardinia, and one across Gibraltar from Morocco. So all of these veins, you are going to pump your blood, the electricity, through high voltage DC or HVDC, 800,000 kilovolt DC, to get all the way through 5,000 kilometer to Scandinavia and to England and to Germany and Europe, and then you can, in Europe, you are going to make use of the wasted solar energy across the other side of the Mediterranean. It is planned that we have super grids or autobahn of energy transportation, fast tracks between Africa, transcontinental, between Africa and Europe, and then for 5,000 kilometers, and then you have cheap, clean electricity in Europe.
So although there will be clear benefits for people in countries like Egypt, when it comes to the idea of exporting electricity to us in Europe via a supergrid of high-voltage cables, Professor Dave Elliott is slightly more cautious. He agrees that the more the price of fossil fuels rises, the currently high price of solar power starts to become more viable. The problems, Professor Elliott foresees, aren't to do with technology or infrastructure, but politics and security.
European Union is in the middle of a process of trying to get a common market arrangement with electricity so that electricity companies can sell their electricity and gas and all the rest at the same price for all over Europe. And it's a bitter fight. The French and the Germans are at each other's throats and so on and so forth, because none of the companies involved want to give up their rights to set their own prices and so on. So you transfer that relatively parochial problem we're fighting out at the moment to try to agree some sort of arrangement whereby we're negotiating prices and access and all the rest for power coming from another continent. It's a nightmare just in terms of commercial transactions. At the moment, we're relying on oil bought in from, in the main, Middle Eastern countries, members of OPEC. And you perhaps can't argue that we're in the best of relationships with each other just because we trade something in common. So I'm not 100% sure that switching from buying oil from OPEC countries to switching to buying solar electricity from a new group of North African countries is automatically going to be a wonderful thing. We might have just as many political problems as we face at the moment. They'll just be different.
For the UK, which has its own fiercely protected energy market, the leap of faith required to make the desert tech concept work could be a leap too far. But, says David Matthews of the Solar Trade Association, for the UK, the industry needs to be galvanised, explained and sold to policymakers as a viable idea. Otherwise, we risk losing out to Germany and other countries which are embracing solar power.
If you take Germany and Austria, the whole industry took off because there was like a tripartite deal between the industry, government and the actual public at large, all signing up to an informal agreement to get this system working. So Germany's been doing it for 10 years. Austria's probably been doing it for 15 years. They're even ahead of the Germans. And I can see that tripartite deal developing in the UK, but we're still 2 or 3 years from getting it fully implemented. And when we get that deal fully implemented, the whole industry and the whole technologies will really take off. And you'll see it as a very common thing within the UK market.
Thomas Marquardt at Southampton University believes that solar power, like other renewables, is only now starting to be seen as a serious player in the energy field. But while we lag behind, UK money and expertise is going abroad.
The relationship between the electricity companies and the solar users or generators have not always been very easy.
Why?
That's a very good question. I think there was initially a large amount of suspicion on both sides. The environmentalists, if you like, did not have very strong engineering bias. The electricity companies looked down on the small generators, looked down on these small amateurs in the business who are meddling in this serious business of power generation.
While this goes on, this difficult relationship, how can solar power ever be viable in this country?
Things have improved over the last 10, 15 years, and we now talk to a number of electricity companies and civil engineering companies, and they are beginning to take solar power seriously. But we need a stimulus for industry to start manufacturing in the UK.
And that comes from government?
And part of the funding, part of the support has to come from government. What happens is that companies like BP or other major players in the field go instead to Germany or to Spain, where they get government support.
The government says UK-generated solar power does have a major role to play in the renewables mix, but at the moment, wind energy is more economical. And Energy Minister Malcolm Wicks denies we are losing our solar expertise to other European countries.
I think because Germany has invested more money, it's been a particular industrial opportunity in Germany, and that's been their decision. I'm bound to say that nothing comes cheaply. This is quite an expensive policy. I have to be aware of the impact on energy costs as well as the deployment of renewable sources. In Britain, we've found that the development of wind turbines has been far more of an economic proposition. The idea we're not backing it is not accurate. I mean, as part of the renewables obligation, there is encouragement for photovoltaics and for solar panels. We've also got the low carbon buildings program. That's grant aid for both householders, but also for schools and other kinds of public buildings and community projects. And part of that program, a very strong part of that program, is photovoltaic. So there is considerable grant aid coming into photovoltaics.
Although a pan-European power grid may seem like a far-fetched concept, the British government is very upbeat about the idea of transporting electricity made by the desert sun across Europe. Malcolm Wicks again.
I think it's an exciting prospect. I mean, it looks rather 21st century, doesn't it? And I guess that's got to be a good thing. The British government, through our officials, experts, have been involved in a number of international meetings on that. I'm very interested in that. Look, to move away from a heavily intensive carbon economy and carbon economies across the world, we've got to think in revolutionary terms. We've got to look at the science and the technology. And I think this is a very serious one. Now, I think a note of caution, in terms of connecting it up, as it were, to some sort of super grid to come from those very sunny parts of the world to Hull or Huddersfield is, I suspect, quite challenging. So I think they need to be seriously looked at. I guess you put oil in a tanker. I don't think you put the sun in a tanker. So I think there are serious cost implications. But look, we've got to look at all the possibilities here, and this potentially is an exciting one. I think the advantage is that we've got to think, as it were, the thinkable and the unthinkable across the world. On the other hand, a big issue for me and for the government is energy security. We've got to get the balance right in the future between the energy we will need to import, mainly oil and gas and coal at the moment, maybe one day solar, and the energy we can produce here in Britain and just offshore. Energy security will become an increasingly important component of a nation security, given the huge global demand, the global grab for energy in the 21st century, and all the difficult geopolitics around that.
So there's excitement in government over the concept of desert solar, but as yet, no official commitment to make it a reality for us in Britain, despite the fact that unlike oil and gas, the sun is one natural resource which shows no sign of running out. How are you persuading governments like the British government to accept this idea? Have you negotiated with them?
The only solution is to show them pilot plants and then to make demos and that they are running, and then with mass production and the advancement of technology, prices are going lower. When you go further and with technology development, which is expensive now, will be cheaper. It is a learning curve like the cars and like the other things. And we have enough solar, enough desert, and enough sea.
Costing the Earth was presented by Miriam O'Reilly and produced in Birmingham by Maggie Eyre.